one lasting legacy of the Trump presidency and this campaign season is intense organizing on both sides of the political aisle. Faith-driven leaders and communities made their voices heard and worked tirelessly to both organize and serve Americans whose right to vote was, in many cases, under relentless attack. Nationwide efforts by the grassroots interfaith activist organization Faith in Action included the Rise and Vote campaign, and member groups at the state level were instrumental in helping this happen in the face of unconscionable obstacles. Certainly in Florida, there are many stories to be told, and we are fortunate to be joined by Pastor Rhonda Thomas, Executive Director of Faith in Florida. Pastor Rhonda, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
It's a pleasure being here with you.
What have these past couple of weeks been like for you and for your organization?
Okay. As you know, I do cover a statewide organization. So it's not just like one area, and Florida is extremely huge and can be interesting some days. But we've been very, very busy in the preparation of getting ready for voter turnout. We've been extremely vigilant of what is taking place on the ground when it comes to voter suppression. And we were very, very successful in getting as many people led by our faith leaders out to the polls to vote. So we've been really, really busy. It still is busy.
Please talk about the incredible numbers of people in Florida affected by the Get Out the Vote efforts spearheaded by Faith in Florida and what those efforts look like.
Just to give an example, this is really historic for the African-American community, particularly in the South Florida area, of doing what we call Souls to the Polls, led by our faith leaders. We were able to cover 25 counties in the state of Florida, starting from Key West in Monroe County, all the way through the Panhandle. And we were able to engage over 800 congregations to be a part of this effort, to not just lead our congregations to the polls, but the communities that our congregations sit in, along with family, impact folks, making sure that we not just get those persons to the polls to vote, but also to oversee and make sure that they have a wonderful voter experience. Because we know that the level of voter suppression is extremely high in the state of Florida, and Miami-Dade County and Broward County had been declared as ground zero for voter suppression. So we were not just wanting to get people at the polls, but we wanted to make sure that they have one of the best voting experiences, and really monitor and hold one accountable if anyone experience anything less than. And so all of that effort took place with a whole lot of planning by our faith leaders. We targeted our millennials, making sure that they were not just a part of the voting experience and getting to the polls, but we also targeted and planned certain events just for the millennials. That's how important this was for us as far as voter turnout. In the midst of a pandemic, we were still able to practice all safety measures. We gave out a lot of PPE, free food, entertainment, and people really celebrated the fact of being able to vote, knowing that we stand on the shoulders of our grandparents and great-grandparents who did not have the great experience where we're able to have in voting.
What are some of the obstacles Florida voters, particularly voters of color, found themselves needing to overcome in 2020?
We've always known that we would have to stand in long lines, and we were willing to stand. Even our senior citizens, the first day of early voting in Miami-Dade County, we had over 60 senior citizens that stood in the rain and they were not accommodated, but they still stood in the rain. We knew that we needed to make sure that our signatures matched as much as possible, because we would have been denied the right to vote. We put a lot of emphasis on making sure all of the returning citizens that we fought for in 2018 to get their voting rights restored, that we put special attention with those voters, because this, for some, was their first experience, first time voting, because of we know that we had a problem where returning citizens with a felony conviction could not vote in Florida. But because of the work we did in 2018, they had that opportunity. So we made sure that we put a lot of emphasis and attention around them as well. We know that we have often been purged from the system and not been gotten any type of letter or any type of information saying that we had been purged. We wouldn't find out that we're purged until you actually got to the booth itself. So those are some of the obstacles that we were looking out for to make sure that we can try to de-escalate those kind of situations before it actually occurs. Some things we had no control of. Some areas did not have an early voting site. We had one, for example, in Coconut Grove, that's a city that's in the Miami-Dade County area. During the primary, it was an early voting site. During the general, there was no early voting site. So those voters and those communities had to travel 8 miles or more just to get to a precinct. We couldn't understand why was that done, considering early the primary was just in August. We were accommodated. And most of those problems come from communities of color, in particular the Black community, the African-American community. We did all that we could to make sure that we can counteract and do all what we can possibly do before it got any worse. We had faith leaders actually monitoring the polls as well, who took shifts 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and only took a break for lunch or just to make sure that voters had a great experience or a better experience. And so those are just a few of the things that we tried to address before it took place. We did notice that there was certain voter, a precinct, that wanted to take temperatures in the parking lot, particularly in the Black community, where other communities, there was no temperatures taken. And so, and not that we had a problem with taking the temperature, but take the temperature in all communities, in all precincts. And so those are some of the things that we saw that was a little unusual, but not surprisingly, that we know that we expect some things to happen in some counties, even more than others. Broward County is always a targeted county. But overall, I think that it was a better experience. What we really cared about is not just getting people out to vote, but that they have a wonderful experience, that their voting rights was protected, and that we wanted to see less voter suppression. And I think that we were pretty good in trying to do all that we could to make sure those efforts was addressed and taken care of.
You know, criticism of advanced polling not reflecting the vote count has been very harsh in recent elections. even as we learn of more and more obstacles being put in the way of young urban and minority voters. If a voter tells a pollster how they intend to vote, only to later find themselves disenfranchised, enough of those and the polls will overestimate support for Democrats. Wouldn't that explain how recent inaccuracies may not mean the failure of polling, but rather widespread partisan voter suppression?
Yes, yeah, it will definitely mean that. It does mean that. And I know that I feel that it's strategic as well. Sometimes we don't realize how powerful our vote is until we're put in some of these ongoing crazy circumstances. And I do feel like it's strategic and there are it's targeted to certain people and communities to detour our voice being heard through our vote. Also, it's a way of being a distraction where it will, because, you know, we think about and we saw the non-accessibility for our handicap or elderly. And I just think that all of that falls all together, and whether it's a party or a race to suppress our vote and also to distract us in ways that we wouldn't come out to vote. And even to the point of making it feel as if our vote does not matter. And so we were very, very strategic in doing as much training as possible and encouraging people how powerful their voice is through voting, the voting process. We know that if we don't vote, we just add to the narrative of destroying democracy. And we want to change that narrative. And we did change it. And we are changing it. And it will not stop. I started doing hearings across the state of Florida in 2019, just collecting stories of different voting experiences that one has had. And we realized how our historic Black colleges across the state and how those students were being treated and was a problem, along with people of color, whether it was a language barrier. When it comes to our Haitian community, we realized that that was used as a way of distracting one to get out to vote. And we then began to collect those stories. We sent those stories to Congresswoman Marsha Fudge because we want to know what needs to be done to protect our voting rights. And we thought that we were very successful. And from those stories, that's how we were able to declare what counties would be ground zero for voter suppression, but it also gave us the opportunity to teach and bring awareness of what to look for, because it had almost become a norm. And we want to change what once looked like a norm. It's no longer a norm. And so I agree it all ties in, and it goes beyond even a party, but I think it's just, if it's ever been a time where I can see how powerful the Black vote and vote of color, how powerful it is, it has been during this last electoral season.
I'd like for you, if you would, to talk about the origins of faith in Florida and about how you got involved in this work.
Okay. I got involved in 2012, just being a pastor, Faith in Florida coming to my office, and at that time it was St. Pico, Florida, wanting to share information about amendments an amendment that would have brought harm to communities of color. And that's how I really got involved. And I knew that they wanted to really engage congregations overall. And so we do represent multiracial, multi-faith congregations across the state, around racial, economic, and social justice. And that's how I really got involved and became a part of this great work in bringing this awareness to faith leaders across the state. I started out just strictly in Miami-Dade County. And after engaging in so many congregations in just Miami-Dade, which is a huge, Miami-Dade is a state by itself with some very interesting type local politics. But yet knowing that that particular amendment will affect the entire state, it just gave me a platform as a faith leader and also a better understanding of what God has called me to do, knowing that my work goes beyond the pulpit inside of the church, but also to go out into the community to empower as many people as possible, knowing that their voice, how powerful their voice is. And for those who have been neglected and disenfranchised and overlooked, that building a space of belonging, a community of belonging, and just giving them the opportunity of sharing their own story. And what do we do with that story? And how do we collect those stories together to then begin to change policies and holding elected officials accountable? And so I started out as a fellow just in Miami-Dade County, just dealing with the Black church and the Black community. And then I realized how Black and brown folks have so much in common, but there's a strategic plan that keeps us separated. Because if we ever came together, I firmly believe if we can change Florida, we can change this country. If we can bring Black and brown folks together under one umbrella, understanding that we have more in common than what separates us, we can make a difference. And so far, faith in Florida has become successful across the state in doing just that.
So many on-the-ground activists regularly report that the deep divisions in our society that seem evident in media are far from universal in real life. I remember Reverend William Barber talking about that with great passion right here on this show. Are you finding that to be true? And if so, what does it teach us about bringing Americans together again over shared values and priorities?
I think that's extremely important and can be valued in such a way where our country overall will be looked at differently, and just shared values. And it's even okay to disagree. But yet we can still work together collectively. I think there's such a need for that across the board. But I think also we have a long way. We're far from it for whatever reason. But I think it's still worth the fight of not giving up and still strategizing it. Creative thinking, and I know that there's still people in this country that care about all people, that gives us hope in the midst of how it may presently look right now.
Would you tell our listeners how they can learn more about faith in Florida and how they can follow and support your work?
Yes, you can. We're definitely on every social media handle, but our website is www.faithinflorida.org. and we can, and depending on what area of the state that you even may have an interest in, you can see all of that on our website, all the areas that we've covered, as well as the just some of the great work that has been done and the success. And so we are, like I said, a statewide organization, but then you'll also see how we're broken down in counties as well. And that's www.faithinflorida.org, or you can always email me at rthomas@faithinflorida.org.
Pastor Rhonda Thomas is Executive Director of Faith in Florida, part of the nationwide Faith in Action Coalition. Effectively organizing Americans for action and engagement, Faith in Florida is building a powerful multicultural nonpartisan network of congregation community organizations for putting values into action. Rhonda, you were there to make sure so many people in Florida overcame manufactured obstacles to cast their votes. And I know the witness of you and your partners will be helpful in voter protection efforts in the years ahead. Thank you so much for what you have been doing in this season of elections. And thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I honor the invite. And please, you be safe as well.